Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. S Y because I love you. R-E-T-T. And I want to give a special Coast to Coast AM shout out to Jerry, who's a veteran, and he's homeless. He's living in a tent by the railroad tracks in Burbank, California. He's trying to get his career going as a cartoonist. So if there's anyone out there who has a gig, who's looking for a good cartoonist, why don't you get a hold of me through my website, strangeplanet.ca, and we'll see if we can hook you up with Jerry. Jerry, I'm thinking about you. I'm praying for you, buddy. Hang in there. Fascination with conspiracies is massive right now. I don't need to tell you that, especially since the rise of Donald Trump, who's both the subject of many conspiracy theories and also the purveyor of a few. New theories appear on social media on a near daily basis, and with continual claims and counterclaims about fake news, it's really hard to say who is telling the truth or what to believe. And perhaps, just perhaps, my guest coming up in hours 3 and 4, Andy Thomas, can help. His book, Conspiracies, The Facts, The Theories, The Evidence, now updated with all the latest events, including pro and anti-Trump theories, Edward Snowden's mass surveillance claims, post-truth issues, and much more. Thomas examines conspiracies across the millennia, from the Roman Empire to the present day, exploring the social and psychological factors that have prompted them to spread. The accounts are stripped of unfounded opinion and presented factually, dramatically highlighting the core issues. Are we really under everyday mass surveillance, as Edward Snowden claims? Is the rise of Donald Trump and global populism a genuine movement, or is it a manipulated social control experiment? Is there a secret governing elite ruling from the shadows, using fear and economic manipulation to create a network of global superstates? Could the attacks of 9/11 have been engineered by agencies within the USA itself? Andy Thomas is standing by to provide some analysis of these and many other conspiracies right here on Coast to Coast AM. Andy Thomas is one of the UK's leading researchers into unexplained mysteries and conspiracy theories. His many books include the acclaimed The Truth Agenda, which explores paranormal phenomena, global cover-ups and prophecies, and vital signs, widely described as the definitive guide to the controversial crop circle phenomenon and nominated for Kindred Spirit magazine's Best Book Award. Andy lectures regularly around the world and makes many regular appearances on TV and radio. You can learn more at his website, truthagenda.org. And his latest is called Conspiracies, The Facts, The Theories, The Evidence. Welcome, Andy Thomas. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
It's very early in the morning. What is it, about 4, 7, 8 o'clock? In England?
Yes, 8 o'clock. A very stormy, very windy morning here.
Ah, all right. You know, Andy, so many books on conspiracies, the ones that, at least that are sort of embraced by the mainstream, the ones that make it onto bookshelves in the main booksellers, they tend to be written by debunkers. And they're like a, I don't know, a sociological, psychological... From a sociological or psychological perspective, examining the people that believe in conspiracies as if they're trying to figure out what's wrong with these people. Have you noticed that?
I have, and you are right. I mean, many of the books that you see that, you know, when you pick them up, you think they're going to discuss conspiracy theories and even possibly believe in them, then what you find is 9 times out of 10 that their purpose is to debunk. And they sort of draw you in, and you think, oh, this could be interesting. And then they just say normally, but there's no evidence to support this, so actually this can't be true. And again, you realize many of those books, they are debunking. They are there to put people off the scent. And you're absolutely right. The other attitude is that anybody that believes in conspiracy theories must in some way be psychologically damaged. They're not people to be taken seriously. That is the message. And yet, you know, what all of those people do that try to reduce it is not look at the evidence. And this is something we see over and over again, a refusal to engage with the actual evidence for conspiracies. And what I try to do in the conspiracies book is to get back to what this is really all about, to look at the evidence, to look also at the theories, but to try to get a good balanced argument that is not there with one agenda. It's trying to get to the truth of it and allow people a voice, because you're quite right, people are no longer allowed to have a voice when it comes to conspiracies in the mainstream.
I don't believe obviously everything is a conspiracy, nor do I believe that nothing is a conspiracy. I think you have to examine it, as you say, you have to look at the evidence, you have to look at the data on a case by case basis, whereas, you know, these debunkers, they tend to conflate everything that, you know, if you believe in JFK being assassinated, you also believe in the lunar landing hoax, or you believe, you know, in Sasquatch. They conflate this. How do you approach conspiracy?
So I've always felt that the best way to get a sense of what is actually going on is to, first of all, start with the official story of something. So, say, take JFK just as an example. So you look at what the official view is or has been, and that has shifted over the years. Then you look at the far end of it, the full-on conspiracy view, and you see what is being said there. And what you normally find is that you will find points that on both sides are probably worth considering. But the middle, somewhere there's usually a gray area, is where you then start to look at. You need repeating references. You need some level of evidence to realize that, okay, neither side here is quite getting to the bottom of this. And that's not an area where many people are comfortable in. We live in an age now when we're very polarized, and especially in the conspiracy world, you get those who believe that absolutely everything is a 100% full-on conspiracy. And then you get others that, you know, are slightly more in the middle, and they get attacked. Now, that's no more helpful, of course, than those that are trying to debunk all conspiracy theories, because then the whole conspiracy discussion world collapses in on itself. And what I'm trying to do with this book is to avoid that hard polarity, to say, well, let's look at everything here so we can get closer to the truth of what's going on. And let's stop attacking each other. We can all agree that we are not being told the whole truth in the mainstream. Now, that much we all know in our hearts of hearts. But let's get down to why that is, and then, you know, we'll get to a clearer truth.
I want to get to some specific examples that you cover in the book, but let me ask you, throw out two arguments that debunkers often use. And the one is that the government, or governments in general, by and large, are inept. You know, they couldn't organize a one-car funeral, as the old joke goes. So, you know, how then could we ascribe these incredibly intricate plots to governments? And then the second one is, how do you keep, let's say, something like an operation like 9/11 or a lunar landing hoax, when there are, you know, tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people involved? How do you keep something that big a secret? Let me get you to respond to the first one, that governments are inept and not capable of such intricate plots.
Well, yes, we all know that incompetence, I mean, that exists at all kinds of levels, to be sure. So sometimes there will be mistakes made. Some things which might look like a deliberate move could be an error. But I don't think that can explain that the huge amount of events we see that, if you look at the official story, simply do not make sense. You know, when you get a certain level of anomalies stacking up above a certain level, then it has to be considered that there is something more conniving going on here. Now, you're also right. I mean, one of the counter-arguments to conspiracy theories is, well, you couldn't keep that undercover. You would need, for instance, so many people to pull this off that, you know, you wouldn't be able to keep it down. So if you take the moon landing theories, I mean, that's a very good example of that, where some say, well, you would need thousands of people to actually, you know, pretend that we've been to the moon to stage it as a hoax. But actually, there have been people who've looked at this and done studies, and it turns out you would not actually need that many people. What you would need is a core team. I mean, clearly, and we're not saying one way or the other here what the truth of these lunar hoax theories is, but clearly, most people in NASA believe they went to the moon. Nobody is saying the whole of NASA could possibly have been involved. Of course not. However, it does look like you could just have a small core team doing something. The people in mission control would absolutely believe that those transmissions were real. Perhaps there might be one or two that might know they were not. And then you would do very easily, you would keep people quiet, either under threat or, and we know there are stage magicians that can do this, you simply use mind control. It may well be that many of the astronauts, if not all of them, in the hoax theory, still absolutely in their own heads believe that they did go to the moon. And yet there are techniques that can give you false memories. So it's not as straightforward as it looks. And for those that scoff and say you could not do this, well, again, if you take the 9/11 conspiracy theories, you would not actually need that many people to pull off something that at the very least could manipulate those events. What you would need is just a few people in key positions of command and control to make certain decisions and then obfuscate, make it not clear where those decisions were coming from. And you'll find often that's how things are pulled off. That is how they happen, is you just get certain people causing confusion in certain positions. You actually, therefore, would not need thousands of people to pull these things off.
This is a new and expanded version. I believe the original book, The Conspiracies, came out in 2013. So just give us, and obviously that book, you talked about 9/11, you talked about Princess Diana. What's included in the new and updated version?
Well, I mean, the world changes so quickly, doesn't it? And, back when that book was written, and that was originally written in 2012 and came out in 2013, of course, nobody could have considered, say, that Donald Trump would become president. That would seem, if you'd have suggested that, people would have thought you were mad. That, of course, has changed many things. And you mentioned at the top of the show there that, you know, he is the target of conspiracy theorists, but he also does believe in a number of areas that very clearly, you know, are famous conspiracy areas. Indeed, he was one of the first people to go on camera stating that he had heard that there were bombs in the buildings on 9/11. You can still find that clip if you know where to look on the internet. So he's long had a history of questioning the establishment. And that, of course, was, you know, one of the attractive things about him to those that hoped he would give a voice to those standing up against the establishment. But, of course, then he has been subject to many attacks on his reputation, on what he does believe. One of the interesting things with Trump, of course, is that when it comes to conspiracy theories, normally the mainstream says it doesn't believe in them. When it comes to Donald Trump, it seems to believe any of them and all of them. So that's been an interesting development. But of course, we've also had the whole rise of the fake news phenomenon, which then raises a major debate about where that fake news really is. Fake news has always been around, and the book Conspiracies goes into the history of conspiracy theory, and you realize that this is not new. We've been misled since time began. But, you know, it's certainly risen now to the surface as a major issue, and the whole talk of living in a post-truth society and so forth. But what's happened is that because fake news has been promoted as, say, people like myself, in the conspiracy world, you know, we are now branded fake news, it enables authorities to try to take it away. And one of the things that the book now tackles is the rise of online censorship. That is a very serious issue. Maybe we'll speak more about this as we go through today, but videos are vanishing off of the internet, things are vanishing off the search engines, and people like Google, people like Facebook, are very specifically stating that they are now removing this kind of material. So it's not even a secret that they are now trying to stop discussion of certain areas. And of course, there are certain extreme things which people are concerned about. But what they're doing is that they're using the excuse of removing fake news to take away perfectly legitimate alternative inquiry. So that's a very serious issue, and the book addresses that. But we've also had Edward Snowden revealing the huge amounts of mass surveillance that's going on. We've had the QAnon movement, which of course claims to be a deep state movement, which is anti-New World Order. And therefore, of course, many people who are in the Donald Trump camp believe that that ultimately supports him. So that's been an absolutely fascinating thing. Here in the UK, which is where I live, we've had claims that the Russians carried out a nerve gas attack in one of our cities here. And there are so many things that, of course, have given rise to conspiracy theories. There's many people that believe that that was a false flag event, that it certainly didn't happen in the way that we have been told in the mainstream media. So the world has changed enormously since that first edition came out, and that is why it was absolutely time for this new one. So it's much expanded. There's a lot of new material, and it certainly takes a new angle, because the repression of this knowledge was something that was not going on to the same degree back then, but that now has really taken off, unfortunately.
I wonder how much of the deplatforming of people that, let's call them citizen journalists, who have sort of stepped into the breach to talk about and investigate these stories, challenge the official narrative, how much of the deplatforming has to do with certain individuals who now have YouTube followers, social media followers that rival cable news networks, and so that they represent a financial threat to mainstream media. It has more to do with that and less to do with, I don't know, the MSM's concern about fake news.
I think it is a mixture. You are quite right. I think any sort of group or any sort of foundation of society that needs certain financial gains, it is going to feel threatened. And the mainstream media has absolutely seen much of its influence fall away in the last few years. I mean, many young people, they're not watching CNN. They're not watching the BBC. You know, they are going to their own news feeds. So, yeah, just financially alone, these companies do not want that to happen, of course. So that is certainly a factor. But I also believe that it's pretty clear there are certain things that we are just not supposed to be talking about. The internet was the genie coming out of the bottle. I mean, the internet has been a gift to those people that want to discuss things that previously it was very hard to discuss so widely. That came along. I don't think it was anticipated by the establishment. And they have been trying to find ways for years now of putting the genie back into the bottle. And they've now done it. Fake news was a gift to them because it enabled them to be able to say, well, we need to stop this misinformation for all your good. And that's how I sell it. They're doing this for our good. And so, of course, now they can legitimately take down anything that they don't like. So it's twofold. There are clearly certain truths that we are not supposed to all be talking about. But equally, yes, financially, they do not want to lose that grip. And you will always find that, you know, money and power, it always goes together and always famously has. And knowledge is also power. Money is power, but knowledge is power. And that is why there are certain areas that they simply clearly do not want us to have access to any longer. And the long-term hope would seem to be that in a couple of generations' time that they will not know that much of this material ever even existed. They won't even look for it. They won't notice that it's gone missing out of the search engines. And that is a very Orwellian program and very concerning.
Andy, we're going to take a time out. We're at the bottom of the hour here, back with more of our discussions. Conspiracies, the facts, the theories, the evidence. Hey, welcome back. Bernadetta Gomez has been blind for 16 years, but using a bionic eye developed by Spanish neuroengineer Eduardo Fernandez, she was able to see again without using her biological eyes at all. The system which Fernandez is honing at his University of Miguel Hernandez lab, comprises of a few different parts, as detailed in a newly published story in MIT Technology Review. First, there's a pair of glasses fitted with a camera that connects to a computer. The computer translates the camera's live video feed into electronic signals. Those signals are then sent via a cable to a port that Fernandez surgically embedded in the back of Gomez's skull. That port connects to an implant in the visual cortex of Gomez's brain. Or it did, for 6 months anyway. That's all the time Fernandez was approved to test the bionic eye with Gomez before he had to remove the 100-electrode implant. And for those 6 months, though, Gomez visited the lab 4 times per week using the system to see a low-res version of the world around her. Though what she saw in her mind was a little more than glowing dots, it was still enough to allow her to identify letters, lights, and people. She even played a simple Pac-Man-like computer game piped directly into her brain, MIT Tech wrote. Now that Fernandez knows his bionic eyes work, he's looking ahead to the next steps. Those will include testing ways to prevent the implant from degrading while in the body and testing the entire system on more people. Absolutely amazing. You can read the whole story in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. UFOCon 2020 is coming to San Francisco at the Holiday Inn, February 20th to the 23rd. That's just around the corner. And on Friday, Feb 21, George Norrie will conduct a special speakers panel and then an audience participation game show with prizes. For more information, go to coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with Andy Thomas, the author of Conspiracies, the Facts, the Theories, the Evidence, when Coast to Coast AM returns. Andy Thomas is with us live from the UK, and his latest is Conspiracies, the Facts, the Theories, the Evidence. I wanted to talk a little bit about false flags, Andy, if we could. I guess my question is, how long have they been with us? I mean, many of us are familiar with things. We use this term a lot now, the Reichstag fire. This is when Hitler blamed communists for setting fire to the German parliament when it was the Nazis. And Hitler, you know, seized on that as an opportunity to solidify his power. And of course, World War II started when Germany attacked Poland after they blamed the Poland for attacking German radio towers, when in fact the Nazis were attacking their own radio towers. So they've been with us a long time. But how far back do they go?
Well, I mean, I explore this in the book because there are many precedents to, you know, claims of modern false flag attacks. I imagine this kind of thing was going on back in our ancient tribal times, where, you know, it would benefit one tribe to make it look like another tribe had done something very bad so that they could justify, you know, them attacking them. So, you know, I'm sure it's just a part of human nature, but certainly you can go right back to the Roman times, and that's where actually the phrase false flag comes from. And you can go into the Roman times and find where what they used to do was either hijack the ships of the enemy or dress their own ships up in the colors and the style of the enemy, and then they would use those ships to attack their own fleet. And thus, of course, you could make it look like the enemy had done it, and then justify all the wars, all the mandates against them. So, I mean, it's from those more ancient times that we get that phrase, false flag. But, of course, many believe that these things are going on today, albeit not quite so obviously sometimes, but sometimes not far off. So anything that is done now where it would seem that you are meant to think that somebody over there did it, but really somebody over there instead did it, it gets false flag, sort of the false flag brand, if you like. But unfortunately, I think there is certainly evidence that this does occur. And sometimes you get attacks which are done, which are, it looks like somebody else had done it. Sometimes, though, you get another kind of a false flag event where something never actually happened, but the public is told that it happened, and then you get the same result, and so a war begins. And, I mean, a good example of that would be the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which, you know, we are told triggered off the Vietnam War. And the official story for years was that there had been a major attack of the North Vietnamese communist forces against the U.S. naval fleet in the Gulf of Tonkin. And in fact, what had happened was a very heavy fog had come down one night, and the U.S. Navy, they believed that they were under attack. So they opened fire into the fog based on what they were seeing on their instruments. But it turned out it was instrument error. You can get this in certain weather conditions. There was actually nobody coming towards them. But all that really happened were a couple of minor gunboat skirmishes. Now, I mean, that was quite common in those waters in those days anyway, so that was not out of the ordinary. And yet the U.S. public, and thus the world, was told there'd been a major attack. And that was used as the trigger for the Vietnam War. And it was only many, many years later, after, you know, a lot of suffering had occurred, where it was quietly acknowledged that, that actually it had been a mistake. So these are the kinds of things you can also brand false flag in a slightly different way, but that is quite shocking, and many believe this still goes on today. I mean, you know, in just recent months, there have been attacks from Iran on various oil tankers and things, but there are people who believe that that is false flag, that we are meant to think that it was Iran, because a war is apparently now required by the ruling elite against Iran. So that's been absolutely in the consciousness. And I mentioned earlier the nerve gas attack here, which we are told to Russian officers in disguise carried out against one of their ex-spies here in a city called Salisbury. But again, you look at the evidence, and it doesn't really add up. Where they were, the times we're told they were there, the way this nerve gas was carried, many people are not convinced that actually that was really what happened. And given that near Salisbury, you have Porton Down, which is one of the major British kind of biological weapons research divisions, the fact that that is up the road, some people think perhaps it was more likely it came from there than it came from Russia. But of course, all of this is denied, and it was certainly used to, you know, create more feeling against the Russians, certainly here in the UK. So claims of false flag attacks and anomalies that might suggest them are still around today. But yeah, absolutely, it goes back to the deepest past.
What is equally shocking, I think, is the role that the mainstream media has played in sort of propping up these false flags, these narratives. If we go back, you know, into recent history in the United States, the USS Maine, and of course the role there played by the papers owned by William Randolph Hearst, in that sort of that rush to judgment, that it was that to hell with Spain, remember the Maine. Although that turns out to have been probably a false flag. Talk to me about the involvement of the media, the complicity of the media in false flags.
Well, I'm afraid that the media and the authorities are basically two sides of the same coin. And this is something that we come up against all the time, because the media needs, obviously, to have the news, it needs immediate access to things, otherwise they can't operate. But equally, politicians, they need the media to be on their side. But they will occasionally, they will expose each other. You get conflicts between the media and the politicians. But ultimately, they both know they can't go too far. Neither side can lose the goodwill of the other forever. So, of course, that's always going to mean that the media is going to wind up dancing to the tune of the elites that are controlling them. Now, I have met people who have worked for, like, major news agencies, especially over here, who said that they were present when big stories they were about to run, suddenly the phone rings and somebody somewhere says, "You're not running that story," and that's it. And nobody talks anymore, and they all understand that the minute that phone rings, you no longer discuss that. And this is the way the world works, I'm afraid. So therefore, you've got an absence of information that can be manipulated. But equally, if those at the top want a certain story to go out there, the media will comply. But then in the end, you get a sort of a knee-jerk where the media just gets used to always going with the official story. and it won't even countenance a conspiracy version of something, almost out of habit, as well as, I'm sure, sometimes being told not to. And so you wind up, therefore, with a lot of people on the outside of the mainstream media trying to talk about things that absolutely, obviously need talking about, and the media appearing either sort of very, very stupid or very, very manipulative by not, you know, not discussing it, not giving it any serious hearing. But yeah, so false flag events, I'm afraid, often are allowed to sort of go around the world in terms of the information by the media simply not calling them, not questioning it, and just going along with the information that they're given. But unfortunately, it's all bound up. And there are some journalists, and we know this, who have been very good. They have stood against the mainstream, but they are then branded maverick and they are pushed to the outside. The vast majority, they will look after their own careers. You know, they're not going to cross the line that they all know is there. So that's the problem. And that's where you then get the alternative media, which has been fantastic in giving airtime to a lot of things that nobody else will. But they are now being attacked as fake news. And so that's where the ruling elites, they're getting the upper hand again and trying to convince the public that these other news sources, they are dangerous. Don't listen to them. They are trying to destroy your society. Whereas, of course, many think it's the other way around.
Getting back to false flags, to my thinking, there's kind of different levels of a false flag. There is the, you know, make it happen. Like we talked about the Gliwice incident where the Germans were attacking their own radio towers and then they blamed the Poland and then they invaded Poland. Then there is the look the other way and let it happen, which is what some people suggest happened at Pearl Harbor. And then there is just the glad it happened and then, you know, take advantage of that. Given those sort of three different categories, in your estimation, is there any war that has ever been fought that was, in fact, a just war?
I suspect there are just wars out there. And I think certainly when you look at what was going on with Adolf Hitler, you know, that was a force that had to be stood against, to be sure. But even when there is a good cause, I think it is very clear that certain events are manipulated. I mean, if you take there's a classic conspiracy theory of World War One, where we had the sinking of the Lusitania. Now, Lusitania, it was a big liner, and it was a British liner, but would often have Americans on board because it went back and forth across the Atlantic. And in, you know, 1915, America was not in the war, but we were now in World War One over here. And there were German U-boats, of course, across the Atlantic. So when the Lusitania was sailing, the British would send out warships to escort it always safely into harbor. And that was always what happened until one day, mysteriously, the warships suddenly sailed away. No reason has ever been given for why they did this. No message was transmitted at the time to explain why they were doing this. And the Lusitania was left very vulnerable and, sure enough, got torpedoed within hours and sank with the loss of over 1,200 people. Now, there are many people who feel that that vessel was allowed to sink, was allowed to be torpedoed. And the First Lord of the Admiralty, who would have been the person giving the big orders over here at that time, was Winston Churchill. Now, this is before he became the Churchill that he's famous for in World War II. And he had written a letter just a few weeks before Lusitania went down, stating that it would be very useful if a liner were to go down. It would have great propaganda value. And on his watch, suddenly a ship is left to be vulnerable. So many people think that that ship was manipulated so that it was sunk. And because, of course, Britain wanted America to join the war. And that was not the only thing that would bring them in, but certainly the sinking of that liner and the loss of so many American people, it did begin to change opinion. So you get events like that very often. You mentioned Pearl Harbor there. Well, even leading top U.S. Navy brass, people have gone on record saying that they believe that Pearl Harbor was allowed to happen. It's pretty clear that there were intelligence warnings given. They knew where and when an attack was likely to happen, and nobody did anything. And, you know, many people think that Franklin Roosevelt wanted America to join the war, and it was convenient to let the attack occur. And, of course, the Japanese, we are told, came unprovoked, but that's not really true either. Their oil was being blockaded. You know, their things were occurring which were going to guarantee a response sooner or later. So many believe that Pearl Harbor was at the very least allowed to occur. Some, of course, believe that 9/11 has a similar edge to it, although others go the whole hog and say that the entire thing was engineered here in the West. But you know, this is a pattern. We see this, and yet when the enemy does it, and you mentioned there the burning of the Reichstag Parliament in 1933 in Berlin, where, you know, most scholars will tell you that the Nazis set fire to that building so that they could blame the communists and expel them from the parliament, which they did. It's strange, isn't it? How many people accept that? But then when you say, well, what makes you think it wouldn't happen in other countries too, like our own, and then they can't accept it. And they go into the strange state of denial where they then say, oh, no, you're just a conspiracy theorist. So this is always what we're up against. There's very much this slightly sort of double standard quality where for some reason people do not want to see that we would do that ourselves. And yet the evidence that we do is, I'm afraid, pretty strong.
Right. Only other people commit conspiracies or concoct conspiracies. Foreigners concoct conspiracies. Not over here. We would never do such a thing. Andy, stay put. We'll take a quick time out as we approach the top of the hour. And towards the bottom of the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines and take questions and comments. Andy Thomas, the author of Conspiracies, The Facts, The Theories, The Evidence.